Hello, this is Sue Lloyd, Vice Chair of the ISSB, and I'm pleased to be here today with our Chair, Emmanuel Faubert, and we're recording this podcast following our November Board Week. For those following our work closely, you might notice that our November Board Week has come straight after the October Board Week. So why don't we start right there, Emmanuel, with that?
Yeah, sure. Hello, Sue. It's good to speak to everyone here. Welcome to the Dog and Pony Show of ISSB every week, listening to the wonderful voice of Sue. And let me, however, start on this one, because this time, indeed, you have a package of that show that covers both the October Board Week and the November Board Week. They are very close because in October, last week in London, we made a very good progress in our nature-related discussions, very rich discussions on key questions that we set out to answer when evaluating whether standard setting around nature is needed, including on a number of aspects such as the investor demand and their information needs, the effect of nature, risks and opportunities on entities' prospects, the opportunities to leverage the work of others, in particular TNFD, that started to be discussed already a long time ago. The TNFD went to present publicly to one of our sessions in the past, and we've been cooperating already on the SASB standards enhancements with them. But this time that was really focused on how we could draw on the TNFD's work for our nature-related, which we call BEES, potential standard setting. So with this good progress, we felt we could potentially be very timely in concluding our research phase, in the substance of that research phase, with the opportunity to move forward with a decision now that would provide the market in a timely manner, because lots of stakeholders convene at COP30, and given how much progress has been made already in the adoption of TNFD-aligned reporting, as we've seen with their latest statistics of more than 700 companies reporting. So we decided just a few minutes ago to draw on the TNFD recommendations to develop incremental new disclosure requirements, i.e. standard setting, and following that, any necessary educational materials. So maybe first, Sue, let's talk about why we will draw on TNFD first and then come back to how.
Sure. So we really see the value in drawing on the TNFD recommendations, their metrics, and the additional guidance they've produced as a means of assisting us in meeting the information needs of investors that we've identified. Also, we see value in considering the locate, evaluate, assess, prepare, or so-called LEAP approach that they use. So there's really good materials there that we think would be relevant to draw upon to build on what we already have in IFRSS 1. So that's the first thing. They've got appropriate content, if you like, for us to consider. The second thing to consider is something you mentioned in passing there, Emmanuel, which is that TNFD have been monitoring the uptake of their use of their recommendations around the world. And we can now see that over 730 companies around the world are using the TNFD recommendations. So that gives us a form of sort of testing, if you like, market acceptance and experience that we can build on. And that's really important and something that people really encouraged us to do where we had the opportunity at the time that the ISSB was first stepped up. So that's also really helpful. And then the other thing is that it fits well with the way that we want to approach our work. So IFRSS 1 starts with covering all sustainability-related risks and opportunities. When it comes to nature, we want to cover all nature-related risks and opportunities. And the TNFD does that. They address nature across all nature topics, so they don't take a sort of subtopic siloed approach, which resonates for us as well. So really drawing on their work is efficient. It also reduces fragmentation by addressing the sort of alphabet soup problem that people talk about, and it enables us to build on leading market practice.
Yeah, so great, great reasons, as you just, reminded us, for us to draw on the TNFD work. And so maybe I can speak a bit about how we discussed and decided that we should be using TNFD. The first thing I'd say again and repeat is that we've in substance, decided to proceed with standard setting to introduce those incremental disclosure requirements on nature-related risks and opportunities that are not already contained explicitly in the ISSB existing standards S1 and S2. We did not decide on the approach today, and we'll look at it, in more details in the coming months. But we had a lot of conversations today about that. In particular, we noted that standard setting can come in many different forms, whether this is standards or application guidance and other aspects, not necessarily also in terms of the status or location or name of what a standard setting work on nature would be. So not necessarily a new separate standard like IFRS S2, nor such a large standard as IFRS S2 probably in any case, because IFRS S2 replicates content from S1 that we don't need to replicate any further. Other options could include a mix of application guidance or amendments to existing standards, but also the industry-based guidance, which I discussed already, or additional sources of guidance. We also discussed on the basis of the staff recommendation what to do with and when to do educational materials. And we've decided that following the standard setting phase, we would develop necessary educational materials that would explain how to apply the requirements in our standards in the context of providing nature-specific information. Noting as well that, of course, IFRS S1 already requires disclosure of information about nature because it's about all risks and opportunities. Finally, I'd note that the ISSB preparers for this next phase of work are numerous and growing, and I would encourage market participants to continue to assess their nature-related topics using TNFD framework, because this will help them prepare disclosing in accordance with IFRS S1 when this will become mandatory, or if they want to in their local jurisdiction, and prepare for any incremental ISSB disclosure requirements that we're going to work on.
Yes, absolutely. And before we move on to cover other updates, maybe just to emphasize another couple of points. One is that we still do need to go through a sort of formal discussion to formally move this project to a standard setting project, which requires some very specific questions to be answered. So this is sort of on the path to those final decisions. I'll just flag that. But also, I think I really want to just reassure those listening, including those who I've spoken to recently, where I've been saying, don't worry, we understand there's a lot to do and we won't rush into new things and introduce lots of new disclosures that you need to worry about. And to say that a large part of the discussion we had today was recognizing that we know that companies have got a lot to do already. And so we're going to be really careful when we think about what to include in any new standard setting and when that new standard setting might be introduced, to think about that risk of disruption and the pace of change and how much the market can absorb. And that's a really important conversation. So, for example, we talked about both the amount of content that might be in a new standard, but also the possibility of having a very long date until something would be mandatory, or even the idea that we could have a standard that doesn't have a mandatory effective date, so it's available for voluntary use for a period of time until a date is included, which are sort of tools that we have in the toolbox that we can use to really assist with this aspect of the change management here. So don't panic. We are really thinking carefully about this. And of course, anything we do is subject to consultation. And on that note, one of the things that we, both Emmanuel and I, talked about in the board meeting today is that we both see the benefit of having a target. It's really good, I think, as a standard setter to have a date in mind when you're working on standard setting. And so we have said that we would like to have a target to have in place an exposure draft on incremental disclosure requirements related to nature that would be ready around the time of the next Convention on Biological Diversity, COP17, which is planned for October next year. So that will be what we'll be working towards. So lots to do. So let's move on to some other updates. And perhaps we could go back in time, Emmanuel, to when we were both here in London last week for our symposium and here for the October board week.
Yeah, thank you, Sue. So that was good to be back in London again. Certainly timely for us as a whole board, given the fact that the UK have recently closed its own consultation that was launched during London Climate Week in London in June. It was also a great opportunity, as usual, to connect with our sister board, the IASB, which allowed me to wear the incredible and unique red tie of the IFRS Foundation to greet everyone at our symposium discussion in London. The one for me of the important aspects of that symposium was that we announced the expansion of our jurisdictional working group. That group was formed as soon as March 2022 and was made of those jurisdictions that were among the most advanced in their thinking and progressing towards building sustainability standards as financial disclosures. And that included the EU, the US, the UK, China, and Japan. And that group has been incredibly helpful for us to discuss strategy, discuss issues, regulatory aspects of our work, alignments, interoperability, the baseline, how to build from the baseline, how to maximize the use of the baseline, etc. And it's been our view that we would now have a huge opportunity in broadening the membership of that group to basically all the nearly 40 jurisdictions that have decided to use or actually adopt or otherwise use the ISSB standards. So that will facilitate a multilateral and a number of bilateral conversations in a specific framework and on a platform that will carry conversations around an increasingly important notion, which is how the ISSB standards can serve as a global passport. A global passport where any preparer can actually enter in a particular jurisdiction without having a visa to carry and just potentially having a few customs declaration to add in case there are other disclosures that are mandatory in addition to the ISSB baseline in a particular jurisdiction. This is the approach that China and others have been considering, but actually many others now are coming and discussing with us about that opportunity, including a number of international companies that just want to have ISSB in their ERP and their system, including for management accounting, but then report on that basis and add the increments that are needed when they enter into any particular jurisdiction. So that would address these emerging cross-border issues and potential fragmentation. And this is where we will be able in this jurisdictional working group, which is expanded, to discuss how ISSB standards as issued by the ISSB can be that that passport. So we also mentioned, beyond that, the unveiling of our jurisdictional rational guide and accompanying tool, another set of great work that we are suggesting to support the jurisdictions and regulators in their way to assess and articulate why there would be rational for their jurisdictional use of ISSB standards. Exploring as well the objectives of these and drawing from insight from the jurisdiction's policy statements, but as well as adoption roadmaps and consultation documents. So quite a few things that we brought to our stakeholders as new news to support the continuation of that next wave now of global adoption of our standards. Sue, you want to provide an update also on what we did beyond the symposium?
Or casting my mind back to last week's board meeting. So we talked about our other research project, Human Capital. And what we discussed there was an interesting paper that the staff pulled together to help us consider how we might structure our thinking essentially around this broad topic in line with concepts that we have in IFRSS 1. So it's a paper that was designed to really provide a structure to help us to analyze, synthesize, organize, and prioritize our findings from the initial phase of research to put us in a good spot for decision making and then how we approach any future work. So it was a good thought piece that enables us to move that thinking forward. Then we did something at the totally different end of the spectrum. So moving all the way from research to agreeing to changes that are about to be processed that will affect the market almost immediately, if you like. And that's in the context of the SASB standards. So those of you who listen to us will know that we're in the process at the moment of finalising these targeted amendments that we're making to IFRS S2 to do with greenhouse gas emissions, which includes some targeted amendments in relation to the information we ask for from some in the commercial banking, insurance and asset under management businesses in relation to financed emissions. And we replicated those financed emissions disclosures in the SASB standards at the time that we published S2. So we had a discussion last week about asking the board to agree that we should maintain that same alignment in the disclosures so that they in sync with the changes that we're making to the corresponding disclosures in IFRS S2. So a consequence of the amendments on financed emissions in S2 is to adjust the SASB financed emissions disclosures to keep them aligned. So that was a separate question in the consultation we had on IFRS S2 earlier this year, and this was just the official vote to agree to make those changes to keep everything in sync. So technical, but important for those who are using the SASB standards and for investors consuming information to make sure that it's comparable. And perhaps before we sign off, there are two further updates I think that our listeners could be interested in. And the first is our 2025 report on capacity building.
I can cover that for you too. So yes, indeed, the report was released yesterday, and it's a roundup of our capacity building activities over last year. It's interesting, the report reflects on a strategic shift moving from building awareness in previous years to now building a deeper understanding of the ISSB standards this year and in years to come. The report outlines some of the tools that we've developed. I mentioned a few of them and more coming, such as our e-learning platform to help stakeholders. And an interesting statistics from the report is that more than 80% of the nearly 10,000 e-learning registered users come from emerging markets and developing economies, which truly reflect the demand for capacity building in these jurisdictions. And so I would close on this particular comment on the report by saying our capacity building efforts are dependent on our partnerships around the world, and we are grateful for the extensive collaboration which has enabled us to deliver support, and we will continue to do so.
Thanks for that, Emmanuel. And from my side, perhaps I could update our listeners on the work that the GHG protocol is doing. So some stakeholders might be aware that the GHG protocol is in the process of updating its corporate suite of standards and guidance. And just last month, they opened a consultation that's open for 60 days on their proposed revisions to their guidance on the measurement of Scope 2 emissions. Why do I care? It's because, of course, we refer to the GHG protocol in IFRS S2 as being the source of guidance that we require companies to use when they measure greenhouse gas emissions in most circumstances. We refer them to the GHG protocol corporate standard 2004. We really want to ensure that any changes that are made to the GHG protocol's work are such that we would be comfortable to retain that alignment with the GHG protocol, because it's just more efficient for the system if the same requirements can be used in different places. And so before we consider whether we should make any changes to IFRS S2 as a consequence of any changes the GHG protocol makes, we at the ISSB were going to need to consider that the changes that are made to the GHG protocol to decide whether that still means those requirements are suitable for use in capital markets. We would consult on any changes to IFRS S2, but in the interim, the feedback that the GHG protocol gets on their consultation is really interesting for us to read and really important for the GHG protocol to be aware of as well. So we just want to make you aware of this consultation and really to encourage you to take a look at it. Now, we have a very special relationship with the GHG protocol that I just want to flag as well. And that's because we rely on the protocol and require its use in IFRS S2. And we're, in fact, the only sustainability standard setter that requires its use. So we want to ensure that we work collaboratively together and that the changes are helpful for us. So we have an MOU in place with the GHG protocol, which results in us having an observer on the independent standards board of the GHG protocol, but it also means that we have a very formal mechanism in place that is unique to us, which provides the ISSB with an opportunity to issue a formal statement to the GHG protocol that acknowledges that representatives of the ISSB have reviewed revisions or changes they propose and whether we see a reason to believe they are or are not fit for purpose. So that means that we can raise our views on the changes in a very formal way to the steering committee and to the independent standards board. Because of this, we're particularly interested to ensure that we are aware of and understand the views of our stakeholders. So their consultation is open until the 19th of December, so you've got time to have a look at it and to respond to questions. So with that, I think that's key insights from the last few weeks. So Emmanuel, what's coming up next?
Thank you, Sue. Well, let me conclude with a few dates here. First and foremost, Brazil. Today and for the next several days, our colleague on the board, Elizabeth Seeger, is in Brazil currently for both the PRI in person and COP30. And we will no doubt have reflections to share from the extensive engagements that she and the team are having there with many partners of ISSB. The second is the B and the G20. And I look forward to travel to South Africa for these meetings and updating you next month on that. There are discussions about ISSB at the B20 right now, potentially at the G20 as well. And so our colleague NDD Ndozin is in South Africa as we speak in preparatory meetings, and I'll join her very soon. And finally, looking at the end of this month, the 30th of November is a critical date because the SASB standards consultation will be ending on that date. And I just want to remind all of you, please gently to respond to it, as we really want to hear from the market about the effort of enhancement of the standards that we're currently pursuing. And with that, I think, Sue, that concludes a long podcast. Remember that it's covering actually two very active board sessions in particular, so I hope you'll find it worth the 36 minutes. Stay tuned with us and we'll be back.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please take the time to rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast player. Please contact us on communications@ifrs.org with any questions, comments, or suggestions. You can also sign up for email alerts on our website, ifrs.org, or find us on social media.